Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Software Quality Podcast. My name is Randy Rice, and it's great to have you with us today. Before we get into the main topic, how to make it big in software, I'd just like to remind you, if you want to stay in touch with what we're doing at Rice Consulting, there's a lot of ways to do that. I would love to have you be a member, like us on Facebook. Just look for Randy Rice's software testing page out there on Facebook. You can also follow me on Twitter at rricetester. And if you go to our website, riceconsulting.com, you can sign up for our newsletter, and I push information out to you every couple of months or so. Also, in May, we have a class coming up in Salt Lake City on ISTQB foundation level training. If you go to the website, you can find more information about that. And I hope many of you can make it to that class. It'll be a lot of fun. And so we have a lot of cool things coming up at RCS, but I know that you want to hear the big topic that we have for today's podcast, which is I'm going to do kind of a combination book review today and also have a interview with the author of the book, Sam Lightstone. And the book is Making It Big in Software. So when I read this book, I thought, you know, this is great, because I had this little talk that I do, how to be a software testing rock star, which kind of goes along the same lines of the book. You know, how do you stand out in what you do? So, you know, this is the great secret, I think, that I tell software professionals, whether it be developers or testers or anyone involved in our field. And the secret is that if you want to rise to the top of the field, it's really not that hard, because so few people do the simple things to rise to the top. And those are the things that you'll learn in this book, Making It Big in Software by Sam Lightstone. Making It Big in Software brings, I think, a good perspective to the idea of breaking through to becoming what you would think of as an elite thought leader in the software profession. Actually, one of the very first things that caught my eye was the cover of the book. You see people on there like James Gosling, the inventor of Java, Steve Wozniak, inventor of the Apple computer. Further on, when you start reading in the book, you'll see interviews with people like Grady Booch, who is a co-founder of Rational Software, but a lot of other people, a lot of other luminaries in the software field. So one of the things that I liked about the book, too, was Sam really anticipated, I think, the question that most people have immediately about this topic. Why bother? I mean, I can understand the question because, you know, if you look at the industry, we've had so many layoffs and people, they've worked hard. We tend to work hard right out of school, right? And then the reward for that is sometimes we get laid off or kicked in the teeth or something. But here's Sam's answer to that as quoted from his book. But with long hours, considerable stress, and no guarantees, the obvious question is whether it's even worth trying to make it big. I believe the answer is yes. The most compelling reason is that in most cases you have to show up to the office and work like a lunatic anyway. It's really not optional, if you want to eat. So if the difference between being a mid-level career programmer and making it big is an incremental strategic investment of time and energy, then it's more than worth it for you and your family. In the long run, the benefits are significant. A more satisfying career, greater influence and impact within your company and the industry, more fun, and more money. And while there may not be less crap to do, at least is strategic work rather than grunt work. Unquote. So to me, some of the enticing things about making it big, and you know, I think about what others have experienced and even what I have experienced in my own life. I feel like I've reached this certain level of success in software testing, is you know, some things are fun and interesting work, corporate and industrial influence, the betterment of society, freedom to work on what you want, when you want. Now, Sam makes it clear that this is what you want to work on, not how much work you have to do. Fame and travel. And I'll just say, from my own perspective, as a minor software testing celebrity, I get to experience these things on a regular basis, and it's good. While travel can be a chore, it is nice to teach in Rome twice a year. So, I think software testers and QA professionals will appreciate Chapter 2 like I did, What Good Software is Really About. This chapter is a concise case for better software and why we need to refine our craft, profession, or whatever you call what we do as software people. Now, Sam lays out all kinds of practical real-world advice, such as what to look for in a company. I like this list, and it reinforces a key idea that you don't have to strike out on your own to make it big. I'll just go through a few of these questions. Is this a company that has experience in building professional, high-quality systems? Are there really talented people here that I can learn from? Number three, is the position I'm being offered one that is interesting with long-term growth potential on something I can believe in? Do they have savvy business executives who really understand the business requirements for success and have a track record for delivering it? Question five, does the company have clarity of vision for the product it produces? Number six, is there an independent research arm? Number seven, how does the company innovate, and how profound has their innovation been? Question eight, is the work environment pleasant and flexible, and does it suit my lifestyle? Question nine, does the company seem stable? Do I believe it will still be around in 10 years? And question 10, is the pay in line with industry standards, unquote? So these are the kind of practical guidelines that you'll find in the book. So the book goes back and forth between interviews and these sections of practical guidance, which I think is a really good thing. And the thing about the interviews is they let you get inside the heads and the hearts of these software gurus, but the guidance also gives you a plan of attack and actually how to get there yourself. So whether we have a good economy, great economy, or bad economy, it really doesn't matter in terms of the importance of standing out and making your mark. In fact, I would tend to say that we need to do so even more in the bad economy. But after all, you know, economies rise and fall. And we all need to learn not to let our jobs distract us from our careers. I think that's a really important point. So this book helps light the way to do that. And I highly recommend it to anyone in the software field. So now let me introduce Sam Lightstone to you. He is the creator of MakingItBigCareers.com, as well as program director and senior technical staff member with IBM Software Group, where he works for one of the world's largest software engineering teams on product strategy and R&D. Sam is a sought-after public speaker, author, inventor, recruiter, and mentor. He has presented to dozens of Fortune 500 companies, industrial and scientific conferences, and major universities on topics related to careers, new technology, and emerging research trends. Sam has been quoted in eWeek, Information Week, InfoWorld, and the MIT Technology Review, and his management career has spanned from small high-performance applied research teams to large-scale projects with more than 200 staff spread across multiple geographies. So it's my pleasure to have with us today Sam Lightstone. Sam, welcome to the Software Quality Podcast. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Randy. Pleasure to be here.
Well, great, great. So today we're going to be talking about your book, Making It Big in Software. I did a review of the book a couple of weeks ago. It's out on my blog at randallrice.blogspot.com, and I really thought a lot about the book. I thought very highly of it. It's a very readable book, and it's one that I would really recommend to anyone in the field of software, even though I know a lot of you listening today are in the field of software quality, but I thought we'd get Sam on the line with us here. And I wanted to kind of pick your brain a little bit, Sam, about why in the world did you decide to write this book on making it big in software? What was your interest in doing this?
Oh, okay, great question. I came to the book very organic process. I've been at IBM for over 20 years now, and I spent more than half of that time as a technical leader and manager. And what I discovered when I became a manager is that most of my employees didn't really know how to get on in their careers. They really were pretty clueless. They knew all about technology, and they were great technologists, but they didn't necessarily know how to help themselves to serve their own best interests, both from the sense of, you know, getting ahead, but even more than that, just how to work the organization, how to be efficient in their jobs, And so I found myself not only mentoring them, but doing my own research on existing literature. And, you know, as part of that, you know, I learned a lot as a manager over the years. I collected notes, and those notes became the backbone of the book. But I also discovered that software is in many ways a lot like other kinds of careers, but in some ways it has its own unique characteristics. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book was, you know, you can buy other books that are sort of generic career books. And that's good, you know, that's good information, but there are some things that are unique to software and software careers. And there really wasn't a good book that looked at the whole picture with a focus on what makes our industry a little different.
Yeah, I really picked up on that, you know, especially like when you give advice in there on how to position yourself on a resume, you know, how to find a really good place to work. Those are things that are pretty software specific, you know, or specific to the software field, right? So
yeah, absolutely.
Oh, no. So I was just going to say, so those kind of things are things you're not going to find in probably your typical how to write a resume book.
Yeah, it's very true. You know, the way you write a resume is different. The way you, the whole interview process is different. You know, what other field is there? You show up in your jeans and instead of asking you all the usual questions, they don't ask you where you want to be in 5 years. They ask you, okay, now, show me how you're going to design an algorithm that calculates, you know, donkeys carrying bananas across the desert or whatever. So, you know, it's a very different kind of world that we live in. It's a kind of place where it's almost like, you know, the higher up the totem pole you go, the more of a bum you get to dress like. It's just so different from every other industry. And, you know, there's a certain freedom that we all enjoy from that. But like you say, you know, you're not going to figure out how to get on in this world by reading, you know, some of the more conservative books.
Right, right. Well, you know, you make the comment there about showing up in jeans and stuff. I it's funny. I did a talk about a month ago to the Kansas City QA organization on how to become a rock star tester was how I positioned it. And, you know, there are some perks, right? I mean, like, I'm a consultant. There's a lot of risk to it. But the payback is some mornings I don't get up until 9 or 10 o'clock. And my wife gives me a hard time about living my rock star lifestyle. But, you know, that they're not that everyone's going to be able to do that. But I tend to work when I want to. I tend to work into the evenings. I get to work with some of the best companies out there and see what's going on. And it's a rush and it's a good way to work.
Yeah, and you know there are downsides to it as well. So I would say I agree with absolutely what you just said, and I would add to that you know, in high tech we're pretty well paid compared to other kinds of careers for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, some of the downsides are that we live in a world that more or less changes every 2 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that is very hard to stay abreast and stay current. If, you know, accountants don't have to do that. Doctors don't have to do that. Most people don't have to do that. We live in a world where everything can change in 2 years and usually does change very dramatically every couple of years. So that introduces a different kind of challenge that is unique to our profession.
That's really true. You know, one of the things that really stuck out to me, mainly because their pictures are on the front of the cover of the book, are the kinds of people that you interviewed for this book. I mean, Steve Wozniak of Apple, and James Gosling, inventor of Java, and you know, Ray Tomlinson, the inventor of email, and many, many others. That's just kind of the tip of the iceberg. I'll leave it to the readers to kind of explore through what all these people told you. I think it was fascinating. But the question that I was wondering in the book, and I think even if I remember right, you might have addressed it there, was how did you get to these people? I mean, how did you actually get these people in the book?
You know, that's a great question, and I don't think I can reveal all my secrets, but I'll tell you a little bit about the journey there, because it was a bit of a journey. You know, when I started writing this book, it was really just my own thoughts. As I mentioned, it was it grew out of a collection of notes and research that I'd done over many years as a manager. But then as I started writing the book, I thought to myself, you know, as profound as my own ideas are, you know, I'd like to think I have something useful to say. It would mean a whole lot more to everyone reading the book if it wasn't just Sam Lightstone's thoughts. And what if I could get, you know, the biggest names in software, in research, in industry, young and old, men and women, get the biggest names and get them to weigh in on what success means to them and how they achieve their success, how do they manage their time. And so that was, you know, one of the early ideas of the book, and that's why the book is about, I would say, one third of the book are these interviews of 17 great personalities. Now, your question is, how do I get a hold of them? Well, first thing I had to do before getting a hold of them was to figure out who I wanted to speak to. And I wanted to strike that balance of, you know, industry versus research, you know, professional research versus academic research, men and women, young and old. And so I made a list and tried to balance all these qualities. And then once I had the list, man, you know, most of these people were extremely hard to get a hold of. It's true. Most of them, you know, don't even have their own web page. They're completely isolated because if they weren't isolated, you know, they'd be bombarded.
Right.
So I had all kinds of tricks. And, one of my tricks was, I would go to search the web, not for that individual, but for other people who worked at the company and look for patterns of emails. So, you know, a lot of companies, they generate emails in a fairly consistent way. So it might be, for example, first name dot last name at company.org or company.com, right? So you can see these patterns. And once you know those patterns, then you can take a reasonable guess at a person's email. So.
Yeah.
Silly tricks like that, you know.
Yeah.
But once I got a hold of them, you know, most of them were more than delighted to speak with me.
Well, that's great. You know, I know in the testing field, most of the people that are at the top of our field are very sharing of their time. I understand that it kind of depends on, you know, which community you tend to you want to delve into as to if they're open or not. But I think it's really great that they would have the attitude of wanting to kind of share some of their wisdom.
Right. So, and it also helped, you know, once I had done a few, it was obviously easier to get more people because I could say, oh, listen, you know, Wozniak agreed and Gosling agreed. Would you like to participate as well? And, of course,
yeah,
it becomes an easier conversation.
So did you get to do some of these interviews, like, over the phone?
Yeah, I would say about half of them were over the phone and half were more of an email exchange, depending on the person. Some people prefer email because it gives them time to reflect.
Right.
And they can, you know, produce a more cogent answer. But I actually, at first when I started the interviews, I thought that was a better way to go, actually, because, you know, people get to think about what they're going to say. But then I realized that the phone interviews were actually much more dynamic and interesting.
Yeah. You know, I used to manage a software testing conference, and after doing that for about 5 or 6 years, really the thing that I came away from it with is just fun to meet some of the keynote speakers that we had. It was just, you know, getting to know the people who I had read their books or I had known of their work, and, you know, being able to say, yeah, you know, I sat across from them and had a cup of coffee one time, and here's what they told me. You know, you collect about 20 or so like you've done here, and it's a pretty rich experience. Sam, you make a comment in the book that I really agree with. It's actually at the very beginning of the book in chapter one about, you know, it's not as hard as you think. You know, there's rewards, there's risk, you know, there's downsides, but it's really not that hard. And you know, could you maybe elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. You know, I think one of the challenges for people is they, you know, especially when they're starting their career, but maybe even many years into their career, they look to the left, look to the right, and they see all who the gurus are, and they go, wow, you know, I could never be a guru because I'm not smart enough, I'm not aggressive enough, I'm not polished enough, whatever the attribute is. And there are a couple of things to realize. First of all, most of the people who are very, very successful in their jobs, oftentimes they've had good mentors who sort of showed them the ropes and how to work the organization and how to get things done, how to make things happen. And there's, you know, slightly different techniques for doing that, whether you're in a small group or in a much larger group. So, you know, it is, if you, if, when a person takes a few moments a week to reflect on what these attributes are and, you know, find yourself a good mentor, read a good book and so on, you can learn the tricks. You know, the tricks aren't that hard. It's not rocket science. And you can, by studying these kinds of things, you know, an hour or two a month, you can build up a rich set of skills, really pretty quickly, that will propel your career and allow you to be much more effective in your job. And that's one of the really interesting things about it is it doesn't take a dramatic, you know, you don't have to work 24 hours a day to become a Steve Wozniak or a James Gosling. You have to learn some of the tricks, be in the right place at the right time. Okay, maybe Steve Wozniak is a bit of an exception. we can't all be Steve Wozniak. But, you know, if you look at most of the people who are really successful, you know, a careful use of their time, a little bit of effort to learn the tricks of the trade, and it goes a long, long way. And it's really not much more than just a couple of hours a month to build up those efficiency skills. And like I say in the book, you're showing up to work anyway, right?
Right.
You've chosen this career anyway. So right. You're already getting up. You're already going to the office. You're already working hard. Why not make that extra very small investment to improve your efficiency, your skills, your ability to work with others and get things done that will propel your career to, you know, amazing heights.
Yeah, that's so true, you know, and I've been in executive meetings where people will say, oh, you know, so-and-so in our department, they actually spoke at a conference once, you know, and it's like they're revering them, you know, because they've spoken at a conference or that they were published in this journal. And I don't think the person themselves knew exactly the regard
right,
that maybe
right.
their management had for them, but it really did give them a lot of credibility. And, you know, it's something that a lot of people just never do. They never put up a blog. They never write an article. They never put in to speak at a conference, even though they're very capable to do that.
Yeah, it's very true. And I would just add to your point that, you know, you have a blog of quality assurance and testing, and a lot of your listeners work in that domain. It's one of the most, you know, rich domains for really being able to shine in your career, because historically it's, you know, there's a rich body of literature and science and technology around quality assurance and testing. Most people who are in quality assurance actually don't spend the time to learn that literature, to review the latest, you know, the latest trends and technologies.
Uh-huh.
The people who do, the people who just spend that small increment of time, whether it's an hour a week to read a paper or read your blog or whatever it is, they almost instantly propel themselves professionally just by doing that, because everyone else around them, or most people around them, aren't. And so it's another one of the interesting dynamics that one of the reasons you don't have to do a lot of this kind of, you know, extra enrichment is because most people aren't.
Exactly. Exactly. It's sometimes not hard to stand out. It's the old Woody Allen thing, right? You know,
right.
80% of success or 90% is showing up sometimes. You know, I think that once again, just kind of while you mentioned that, and I have it in my notes here to make sure that I mentioned, is chapter two, I think will be of particular interest to our audience. And I just wanted to say personally, I really appreciate you putting this in here about what good software is really about. I think it's going to be good information for my audience, but it also, I think, builds a good foundation for the rest of the book, because, you know, so many times I think we get people with the idea that in all areas of business that we can slap something together and throw it out and it'll be good enough to endure until we can throw something else together that's a little bit better. You know, sometimes that works actually, but a lot of times,
right,
you know,
right.
there's problems with it. But
yeah, and so the key thing is to realize that quality isn't what, you know, quality is not a metric. It's
yeah.
what your market perceives. And if the market has an extremely high bar for quality for whatever it is you're building, then your bar is higher. And if the market has a very low bar, then your bar is lower. And so it's not, quality really differs from project to project, from domain to domain. Sometimes it's measured more in reliability, sometimes more in usability, and so on.
Exactly. That's a very good point. One other question, Sam. You know, I'm looking at the job force now, okay, and there's a lot of stuff going on. We're facing, you know, the aging population of developers and testers. People, you know, I'm not quite there yet. I'm 55, but you know, I'm a boomer, and there's going to be a lot of us boomers kind of going over the hump. And I think a lot of us are going to still want to keep our fingers in things because, yeah, we love what we do, you know. But then I go to these conferences. I speak at a lot of the testing conferences, and a lot of the people that are in my sessions now are very young. They're, you know, the millennials. And I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, I don't know. I'm assuming you've probably thought through this since your big thing is about careers, but what do you see ahead maybe in the next 5 years or so, or 10 years, in the shifting of kind of the demographics of the software workforce? Have you given any thought to that, or talked to anyone else about that?
Yeah, I have, and I did touch on it briefly in the book. There's a couple of dynamics to that. So one is the age demographic that you're alluding to. The other is the geographic issues in terms of outsourcing. There's been a lot of concern about, let me speak first to the outsourcing topic. There's been a lot of concern about outsourcing and jobs going to China and India. It was actually a theme in President Obama's State of the Union address the other night. For those who heard his address, you know, he's interested in stemming that tide. But I actually think that it's, you know, the concern of jobs heading overseas is not as serious as people think, because it's a temporary blip. And what happens is, as these economies in India and China, as they grow and they become more successful and more industrialized, the wages grow. And so the fact that labor is cheap there is a very temporary thing. Now, what's also the case is that, you know, when the wages are low, this skill also happens to be noticeably lower than it is in North America. As they industrialize and their wages increase and their skills increase, you know, it all goes together. So by the time that they have the same level of skill that we have in North America, they're not necessarily a lot cheaper. At which point, you know. So, you know, you have these sort of temporary blips for a few years as economies adjust, but it's really mostly a temporary phenomenon. Now, your question about the age demographic, which is a different axis of the conversation, you know, it's always a challenge in high tech, as I mentioned, to keep up the pace and stay with the changing technology. But the interesting observation there is that most people really don't bother. Most people are driven by need to know, right? So I need to know it in my job, I learn it. If I don't need to know it in my job, I probably don't bother. And that's the kiss of death, because then what happens is you really aren't keeping up. You're really just, your knowledge and your skills are limited to what you're exposed to. And so it becomes more of a force of organics than a deliberate career path that you are choosing. Now, the challenge for all of us as we get older is really to stay on top and bring the strength of our experience to bear. So for those who are able to keep up their skills and keep up with the latest technology and the latest research, and you don't have to be on the very cutting edge, but you have to be current. If you can keep yourself current and add to that, you know, many years of experience, then you'll always be valuable. The real challenge that many people have is, you know, they don't bother to stay current, and then they find themselves in their late 50s or early 60s, and they don't necessarily have the financial means to retire, but they're not current anymore, and they've got a bunch of skills around COBOL or whatever, and, you know, nobody wants to offer them a job. So staying current is super important. It's especially important as we age, because our salaries are increasing usually with age. And so you become a more expensive commodity as you get older, and you have to provide value that justifies that extra expense.
Yeah, very good point. So Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how the whole demographic thing plays out. It, you know, a lot, I hope that I'm not working until my 80s or 90s. But you know, if I
Right,
have
me
to do
too.
some, yeah, you know, my parents still they do some things, but it's, you know, I would just as soon go fishing. But so Sam, thanks for your time. Tell us a little bit just before we wrap up here. So, you have a website, right? Or there's a maybe an associated website about makingitbigcareers.com. Is that
That's right.
someplace people can go for some more resources?
I have some snippets of the interviews I did with some of the folks in the book, Marissa Mayer and Steve Wozniak and a few others, and also a few recordings of me, and there are some blog posts there that folks will probably find of some interest. And it's also a way if people want to reach out to me personally, they can send me a message there.
Great, great. And so the name of the book is Making It Big in Software, is published by Prentice Hall. You can get it on Amazon, all the major sellers, and also I've got it on my Safari bookshelf. You know, that's a great tool, you know, the Safari book service. I use it all the time on projects. So if you just want to kind of read it electronically, you can do that too. So Sam, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you, Randy. A pleasure.
So that's it for this episode of the Software Quality Podcast. This is Randy Rice. Once again, our thanks to Sam Lightstone for being with us today. And until next time, I wish you happy testing.